Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the first bilingual show for CSNP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And tonight is Monday night. We are live, and we have a very lunatic, magical, mysterious and wonderful show because our guest is just all of those things and then more. I'm very, very happy to have a very new friend of mine, Storm Fairywolf, and I'm going to read you about Storm's bio. Storm is a professional author, experienced teacher, visionary poet, and practicing warlock, trained in various streams of initiatic witchcraft. Most notably, the fairy tradition. He holds the black wand of a master sorcerer. He is the founder of the Blue Rose lineage, as well as co-founder of Black Rose Witchcraft, with studies and initiates across the globe. Co-owner of The Mystic Dream and author of Betwixt and Between, and Forbidden Mysteries of the Fairy Witchcraft. He is committed to rekindling the ancient connections between humankind and the hidden kingdom. He lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. And if you want to learn more about and their work, you can visit fairywolf.com. That is fairywolf.com. And I'm very, very happy to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays. Storm, how are you?
Thank you. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is my absolute pleasure to have you here. And I am very intrigued by everything that you do because it just is so outside of the realm of things that I practice. And I'm so curious to learn so much about you, but especially there's something very specific that I want to really go very deep with you. But before we go into that, I have to ask you what I ask every single one of my guests. How did you know this was your path? First of all, how do you self-identify? Warlock, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I do. I'm one of those that identify as a warlock, though that sometimes gets me some raised eyebrows or even hate mail. I use that term very specifically since the dictionary definition of that word is a male witch. And yeah. That is the actual definition of the word, despite what many neopagans will say. mostly people will send me email and say, well, why do you call yourself a warlock? Don't you know that that means oath breaker? It means liar, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I've written about this before, but my answer to that is that, well, that's true. It used to mean that, you know, when the word came about, you know, in the Christian era, the word warlock did mean oath breaker. But we have to understand that being in the Christian era, whose oaths do you think were being broken? You know, this is definitely a from a Christian perspective, you know, so, but plenty of words that we use today mean something different or even opposite of what they used to mean originally. And I don't see a lot of people who are getting down on warlock. I don't see them telling people that they shouldn't use the word girl or they shouldn't use the word brave. Those are words that meant something different, you know, when they originally came about. But we use them in everyday language now because we have them in the dictionary and we know what they mean. But for some reason, a lot of pagans really are down on the word warlock. So I'm kind of on this campaign to raise awareness about this word. And if you are a man who is practicing witchcraft and you feel drawn to using that word, I'm here to say it's okay if you want to use that word. It's also okay if you don't. If you're a man practicing witchcraft and you don't want to use that word, you don't like it for whatever reason, that's okay. No one's saying that you have to use it. But here I am. I'm writing about using that word. I think it's a very important word. For one reason, it does bring up a lot of emotions for people, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a word of power. And
I'm also
a gay man. And so as a gay man, I've had plenty of words thrown at me, you know, that maybe weren't so nice or weren't intended to be so nice. And one of those words when I was little that would get thrown around was the word queer. And it was used as a derogatory term, you know, for a gay man mostly. And now I really identify with the word queer, you know, and I think there's something really powerful about taking a word that was thrown at you with anger and used in a derogatory way and then reclaiming it and transforming it. And I really feel that this is one of the powers of the witch, is to transform something from something that is maybe poisonous or even useless or harmful, and transforming it into something that is beautiful and powerful and useful. And so that's part of my philosophy behind using the word warlock. Also, just I feel that we need some terms that help us to focus on our sexuality, you know, or maybe even our gender identity. And warlock helps me to focus on the divine masculine and my place within the energy, you know, of the witchcraft, but as a man, as opposed to a feminine expression. There's nothing wrong, of course, with the feminine expression. We all know that the word witch is gender neutral. However, a lot of the iconography and symbolism that is attached to the word witch is decidedly feminine. And again, as a gay man, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. So I just turned 50 this year. And, you know, one of the arguments that was leveled against me just for being a gay man was that I wasn't a real man. And so for me to use the word warlock today, it's about me claiming my masculinity, but also redefining masculinity. You know, this is me saying, hey, there's many different ways to be a man. There's many different ways to be a witch, and now there's many different ways to be a warlock, too.
I have, you are the person, the second person, pardon me, that I know that uses the word warlock, and it's real funny because on my very beginnings of doing podcasts 10 years ago, for a couple of years, I did podcasts with a man who their name, social public name is Warlock, and he's very well known and all over Latin America and the Spanish speaking fan community. So I am not that foreign or unused to the word, to the name. You are the only person who speaks English though that I know that uses the word, and I think you are absolutely right. And I know you're not looking for supporters, but I totally support you using the word, and for the reasons that you have just said, because being bilingual, the word bruja, you know, it's also gender as female. And then there are some male practitioners that like bruja and they identify as male brujas, but there is a word for it in masculine, you know, just brujo. And it's just, I mean, to each their own, but I am totally with you. And speaking of bruja, that's why I call myself bruja before anything else, because at the beginning of my practice, I also have a very ignorant person who spoke English and told me that she was not a bruja and not to call her bruja because that was like despective. And I'm like, dude, it means witch. You know, I mean, English and Spanish is the same word. But it is wonderful. I love the passion that you present when you defend that word. And it is just about knowing who you are and what you do. And speaking of knowing who you are, so when did you know in your younger years, I guess, in your youth, I don't know, when did you know you were a warlock?
Well, you know, it all started, it's funny because I've been asked this, you know, on interviews, you know, many times. And so for the listeners today, if they listen to any of the interviews I've given over the years, they're going to hear this familiar story. But I will admit, it was when I was two and I was watching reruns of the old sitcom Bewitched. And there was something that just really attracted me about witchcraft. I loved Samantha Stevens. It was a great show. It was hilarious. But they had witches and they had warlocks. And so that was my first introduction to those terms. And so, but there was just something, I think it planted a seed and I just felt drawn to witchcraft. And then after that, it was anything I could get my hands on that had witches. And I will say, I'm one of those people that loves all the cheesy, we call it like the witch kitsch, right? It's just all the cheesy little images of witches, you know, around Halloween, the cackling witch riding the broom across the full moon, the green-faced witch. I love all of it. I love all of it, all forms of witches. I always have. But it was probably when I was about, I don't know, 12 or 13 is probably when I started first reading books on the occult and witchcraft and magic and all sorts of different forms of that. But it was specifically witchcraft that just continued to draw me. And so when I was 14, I actually wrote and performed my own version of a dedication rite in which I dedicated myself to the craft, and specifically at that time was calling to the goddess Diana. I went out in my suburban backyard underneath the full moon, and I lit a candle, and I cut an apple crossways to reveal the star, and I gave half of it as an offering, and I ate the other half, and I actually still have the apple core, you know, from all those years. It's somewhere here in my office. But that's really where I formally took on the path of the craft. And I've been performing and practicing rather some form, you know, of the craft ever since. And I've of course read everything I could get my hands on. I've joined different groups over the years. I've been trained and initiated into a few different traditions of the craft. But first and foremost is really my love is the fairy tradition, which of course is, I'm speaking about a particular tradition of initiatory witchcraft that originated here in the United States. There's many things that are called fairy, and so I just want to be clear, that's the one I'm talking about. It stems from the work of the late Victor and Cora Anderson. But I do practice a lot of different forms of magic and witchcraft, and for me it all just kind of blends together and becomes a personal magical practice. And here I am, like I said, I was 14 when I formally started. I just turned 50 a couple months ago. I don't think it's just a phase. I think this is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my time.
Could it be people wondering when you're 50 or 48? I just turned 48 myself, so it's like, it's not going to change.
Birthday.
Thank you, hon. Happy birthday to you, too, because it was not too long ago.
Thank you.
Yeah. And,
Early March.
Early March, yeah. It's wasn't it right around when I met you? I think it was.
It's all a blur. I'm also a Pisces, and so I don't necessarily get along with linear time. I don't know exactly when we spoke last. It wasn't that long ago. But yeah, it was my birthday's March 4. And so the big 5-0.
We're both water signs. How do you feel about age? Because you look very young.
Thank you.
Know that 50 is not young, but you don't look 50. That's what I'm trying to say. Or what people say that people who are 50 look like. You're a water sign, just like me. We're both water signs. And
I'm a Pisces. I'm very Pisces. And I do feel, though, sometimes my saving grace is my Aries rising. Otherwise, I don't know if I would be able to get anything done.
But, oh, yeah, you're a Pisces where you're rising. Oh, God. That has to be a little how do you deal with those, all those emotions and then all that air and all that fire?
Well,
and
I think that the thing that makes it all workable for me, and I'm not really an astrologer. I have astrologer friends and they're always telling me all the ins and outs and, oh, in this house and that degree. And I will admit most of that goes right over my head. If I was in a coven, I would definitely want somebody in my coven who was an astrologer, you know, right. And so whenever we've worked in covens before, there's always somebody who's an astrologer, but that is not me. But my saving grace with that, I think, is I have a Gemini moon. And so that enables me to really kind of intellectualize my emotions, and that's why I'm a big talker, and that's probably why I'm a writer, you know, because I get to articulate these things. I don't necessarily know exactly all the details of what I'm feeling until I'm able to actually express it. You know, so to me, that's very helpful to be able to talk about things and to write about things, because then I get to sort out my own feelings on them. But I don't know. I don't have anything to compare it to because, you know, this is the one life I know. So,
right?
You know, reincarnation notwithstanding, you know.
I think it's that Gemini moon that helps you actually to balance the two so opposite. And I'm not an astrologer by any means, but I have a wonderful collaborator. For those who are bilingual or speak Spanish as first language, Monica Govin, and she's one of our collaborators on another show. Everything and anything that I know of astrology, I learned from her because she explains all those things. And otherwise, a couple of years ago, I would have been like, I don't even know what my rising is, you know. But anyway, back to your work. And to work with the fairy tradition, because when I met you, and I remember I was like so afraid to ask you, but then I found out the wonderful person that you are and how you explained that to me so beautifully. Because when I'm an earth witch, right? I'm like, we're going to work with what is in our hands. We're going to work with the earth. We're going to work with the crystals and the energy here. And for me, hearing the word fairy was like so fantastic and so the fabulousness of it. But it's like I used to think of it just as a mythological, fantastic thing. And I don't know if you get that a lot. And I don't mean any disrespect. Of course, I do not. But how do you deal with ignorant people who might think the way I think, but then be ignorant about it and don't know what fairies are or how to work the fairy magic?
Well, I think in terms of you know, ignorant people, you know, we're all ignorant on some level, right? We have our little areas of knowledge and expertise. But there's, you know, there's obviously stuff that I don't know anything about. So I always just try to extend that courtesy to everyone, you know. So even when people might be sending me hate mail, you know, saying, hey, you should call yourself a warlock or whatever, I don't necessarily assume that they're trying to be a jerk, although certainly if you're sending somebody angry email, that's kind of a jerky thing to do. But, you know, I try to decide that, okay, they actually are trying to help me out. They think they know something. They're trying to let me know what they know. My place is really to just state what I believe, and here's the research that I've done. So when people ask me about fairy, which there's so many, the word fairy is so nebulous, right? Because we have this idea, oh, a fairy is this small little maybe woodland creature, right? You know, and often we'll think of them as like small little women, you know, with wings and whatever. And this is because, you know, the Victorian era and then also the Disney Corporation, you know, has really kind of promoted this idea. We think of Tinkerbell, you know, from Peter Pan. But going back further, again, I mentioned the Victorian era and that kind of during the Romance time, you know, there really was this move toward presenting the fairies in a diminutive form. But if you look back in folklore that predates all of that, the fairies or the fae, you know, were often depicted as even scary. They could be regular human sized people. They could look indistinguishable from people, or they could look like any number of things because they could could change shape, you know, and whatnot. But really the word fairy originally spoke of things of magic and enchantment. And that was it. So it wasn't necessarily speaking specifically about a race of beings, you know, mm-hmm. or a specific realm, although that tends to be what we think of today. But fairy was just really anything that was magical, anything that was mysterious or unexplained or fantastical, that was fairy. That was a fairy encounter, you know. So if people were seeing, like, you know, orbs of light, you know, dancing in the forest, oh, that was the fairies. You know, if you were hearing, like, you know, strange, you know, sounds, you know, going around your property, that was the fairies. If you had, like, a strange chill, you know, or seeing shadows in your home, you know, moving around, that was often the fairies. It was really when the Christian era took hold that then these things started to become literally demonized. And it was this idea that, like, oh, well, that's actually demons. That's actually the devil, you know. And so things kind of got strange, you know, in that regard. But when mm-hmm. I'm talking about fairy, obviously I'm talking, like I said, about this particular tradition of witchcraft. And we do work with, quote unquote, the fairy realm. Mostly, but not all of us do. And this is one of those confusing things about the fairy tradition that I teach, is that not all of us actually work with what we understand of as the fairy realm. We're working with just magic. And I'm not really putting too fine a point on it, because really a lot of the magic that we deal with, whether it's in the fairy tradition or outside the fairy tradition, you know, people will have their definitions. But ultimately, we don't really know. It's a mystery. We can't really understand it fully with our rational mind. And so for me, working with fairy is about moving outside the rational and allowing for things that cannot be explained. There's also a feeling of eeriness, you know, to it. And that's kind of hallmark of, you know, the fae. You know, a fairy magic. It feels eerie. It's weird. You know, it's unexplained. And those are the things that have always drawn me, you know. So in that regard, we might look at many different things as potential fairy phenomenon, such even things like cryptids, you know, Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster. They could be considered to be fairy, you know, in this way, because they're out of the ordinary. We can't exactly explain them. Even things like UFOs. Alien encounters. Oh, wow. And I will say specifically, like, the whole lore of UFOs, or actually I think now the preferred term is unidentified aerial phenomenon. But that, and with alien encounters, specifically abductions, if you look at the accounts of those stories, and then you look at the accounts in the pre-modern world of, like, fairy encounters and fairy abductions, the details are strikingly similar. And so it's actually, from my perspective, I think it's actually the same thing that's going on. It's just now we live in a modern society, and so our conscious projection is that, oh, it has to be this, I don't know, physical, scientific thing that's going on. So instead of seeing, you know, strange beings, you know, dancing in the forest, you know, now we are seeing what we think are alien beings from another world. But I do believe it's probably the same phenomenon.
Of course, because you're so right. I've never thought about it that way. But like in Mexico, when the colonizers came, and for us, a skull or a cranium is a symbol of life. It's a symbol of a life lived, and it is very revered and it's very sacred, and they're everywhere in Mexico, especially like Mexico City, Northwest, Teotihuacan, and all those archaeological sites. They're filled with skulls. But for us, they mean, you know, life and honoring being alive. And then think about the colonizers coming with the lens of, you know, the Black Plague that they just had gone through. And then the Inquisition, and then all this demonic imagery. And they see that, and they're going to think about it through their lens. So
right,
now
exactly.
You have the fairies seen back then through the lens of that society, that age, and that technology, and then the way we see them now. That makes absolute sense. You have just blown my mind. As for you, every time I talk to you, I have a very specific theory on UFOs, or actually little green people. But I mean, it's totally non-coincidental with the theme of what we're talking about. But I tend to believe that they are people, that they are humans from a future. Very, very distant.
Oh, yeah, right on.
And that they're coming around and that they cannot make contact because we'll watch Back of the Future and, you know, you cannot make contact. So, you know. But anyway, and also about my theories, I really want to talk about your books. But believe it or not, we are already on the half an hour mark. So I'm we're going to take a little break. We're going to listen to one of my favorite songs by Wendy Rule. This is called Creator Destroyer, and it's such a beautiful song. I love it.
I love it.
Right? Isn't it one of the best? I just love that song. So
adore her.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Let's go into a break. We can talk about the two that I have in my hands. I think you're working on other books, and you probably have more books that I haven't heard about. But when we come back, we're going to talk about your work and your books and that three realm thing that just fascinates me. But I'm going to ask the audience, don't go anywhere. We're going to listen to Wendy Rule, Creator Destroyer, and we'll be right back with more here on Lunatic Mondays. Don't go anywhere.
Destroyer, come and take over.
are listening to Lunatic Mondays, building bridges of community around the world. We'll continue with more. Don't go anywhere. I don't know who she is, and I don't know what she was talking about. Anyway, that was Wendy Rule. Oh, my God, I love her. I just want to tell you, first of all, welcome back to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and for those of you who will continue listening to us in July, on July 26th, we're going to have Stacy DeMarco, author and wonderful, wonderful creator of various oracles that yours truly utilizes a lot because I love her work and her ethics, and that is important. And for August on Lunatic Mondays, we're going to have an English author, Jason Mankey, on August 9th. And on August 23rd, we're going to have Laura Tempest-Sakharov talking about their new books, the one, Horned God, and the other one, Anathema of a Witch. And for those who speak Spanish, we're going to have Elohim talking about manifestation magic. That is going to be in Spanish. Of course, you have the Paganos del Mundo in English and Portuguese. What am I saying? Paganos del Mundo in Spanish and Portuguese. And, of course, all of the other shows on the CSMP station, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast with Selena Fox on Sundays and Wednesdays, with Deborah Rose two Tuesdays a month, and with David and Janet Ewen two Thursdays a month. And for everything Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, you can follow us on the CSMP page, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. I have to say it slow because I know I butcher my words sometimes. ESL here, please forgive me. No, you don't have to. Anyway, we are back here with Storm, and we're going to be talking about the books. You have, I have, welcome back, Storm. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And there is something that I heard you talk about the other day, and my eyes were like plates. And that time you actually got to see me, that I was like, what? What are you talking about, the three realms of the fairies? What is this all about? I know, I mean, we have time, but we don't have a whole lot of time. Buy the book, folks. Buy the book because he explains everything in that book. But I was mesmerized to see the personal trinity, the mental soul,
yeah,
soul, and the holy daemon. That is, you made a convert out of me with that one. Can you explain a little bit for the audience?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is actually a model of, we'll call it the etheric anatomy or the spiritual anatomy of the human being. And this is something that I learned, of course, through the fairy witchcraft tradition, but it actually shows up in some other traditions as well in some slightly different forms. But this particular model says that human beings don't have just one soul, but they have three souls, or we might think of them as three parts to the soul. And so there's the talker, which we usually associate with the personality, our conscious mind. Then there's the other part, which is the fetch, or the lower soul. This is our primal soul. This is the part of us that just is emotional. We engage it more fully in the dream realm. It's the closest to the body, so it's all interested in keeping the body alive and taking life force and directing it where it needs to go. And then the final and highest part of our soul structure is the God soul, or what I call in Blue Rose, the holy daemon, you know, drawing from that old idea of the Greek daimon, that tutelary spirit or an intercessor between yourself and the gods. And our job in the fairy tradition is to maintain a relationship with these three souls and to keep them aligned and keep them in good health. And so one of our foundational practices is the soul alignment in order to really draw our energy, our conscious energy, into these three parts of ourselves and then bringing them all together so that they can communicate more effectively. And this is really the foundation for all of magic. You know, when we are doing a ritual, and we're playing with, you know, oh, the nice incense and the pretty candles, and we've got symbols and stuff. That's all stuff that speaks to our fetch, to our lower soul, because, of course, the fetch doesn't speak in, you know, human language. It speaks in, like, emotional impulses and gut reactions, and we might liken it to the reptilian brain. But the talker, our conscious mind, is the part that says, okay, I'm going to do a ritual. I'm going to do a spell for money. And so I'm going to get, you know, my money oil. I'm going to get chamomile, because chamomile is associated with money in some traditions. And that's the talker part. But then we raise that energy and we play with those things. We light those candles, and that engages the fetch. And we have to engage the fetch, because the fetch is the part that speaks directly to the holy daemon, to the god soul or the higher self. And so by doing these different things, we're able to bring in more of ourselves. We're able to be a whole person, you know, because we have our human self, we have our animal self, we have our divine self, you know, and these are important to bring them all together. We need all three in order to work magic and to live a healthy life. You know, we want to be in communion with our higher self, with our holy daemon, because it's through also the holy daemon that we're able to more effectively and safely communicate with spirits and deities and whatnot. So, but other traditions do work with this as well in some form, not exactly. You know, there's some traditions that work with four parts or five parts. If you look at ancient Egyptian, they have many different parts to the soul. You know, but this particular model just really spoke to me, and it on a practical level works really well. So it's one of the things that I often talk about when I'm teaching workshops, when I'm traveling around. I will talk about soul alignment, and I do talk about it extensively in my book Betwixt and Between, which really is all about the fairy tradition, the history, the basic practices, and gives people an opportunity to work with a Blue Rose style fairy practice without having to be initiated into our tradition.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, like if people have to be initiated to do this kind of work, or if they can self-learn and taught and do it on their own.
Yeah, there's many things that we can do on our own. You know, I mean, there's certain things that within our path, within fairy tradition, there's certain things you can't do unless you're an initiate, and that's fine. But for most people, they're not going to need that. You know, most people don't need to be initiated into the priesthood of fairy. Those who are called, you know, who have a calling, you know, to be part of our tradition, well, then it will be important for those people to seek out a teacher and to train with an actual live teacher, because there's many things that just cannot be conveyed through a book. But there's also a lot of stuff in our tradition that is just useful, you know, just for any magical user, or I would say just any human, you know, trying to live an introspective spiritual life. And so those are the things that I really were hoping people would connect to, you know, in my work, are those things that can really help them in their own path. I'm not necessarily trying to make more fairy initiates in the world, you know, that's fine. But I would like to present what I find to be useful. There's a lot of tools in our tradition that I think anybody can benefit from.
Yeah, because otherwise, for some people, it's more like a cultish thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and that happens in our tradition, too. There's, you know, we're a pretty diverse tradition, and there's different lineages, and we have different practices, and we don't all agree on stuff. But there's definitely, from my perspective, a more culty side, you know, of the fairy witchcraft tradition. And I just disassociate from that altogether. You know, I don't find any value in that. It might as well be Scientology at that point.
Right? I love you. I love you. I love how you...
Thank you. The feeling is mutual. Thank you, Laura.
Well, it was in your mind and without any... I mean, that's the power of the warlock. That's the power of the witch. you say what you think, you own what you think, and then when you know who you are, you just say your thing. And I love it. So I was telling you, I have the two books here before me, Forbidden Mysteries of Fairy Witchcraft, and then the Betwixt and Between. Do you think these are like a series, or can it be read separately?
So they were actually intended to be more of a series. So Betwixt and Between is first. So if you're interested in the fairy witchcraft tradition, I would recommend starting with Betwixt and Between, because that gives you the foundation and the history and all of that. It gives you a context for understanding the tradition. And then Forbidden Mysteries of Fairy Witchcraft, that was, in my mind, it was the sequel, because that actually takes you deeper. It takes you into kind of what many would say is the darker of our work, the shadow work, working with the concept of divine possession, you know, literally being possessed by our gods and allowing them to speak through us. And there's a lot of other stuff too. There's some folkloric fairy journeying and elements in that book as well. But you actually, if you're just going to get one, if you're drawn to Forbidden Mysteries, I did put an appendix in the back of the book that gives some of that foundational information, so you could still work with it on its own, you know. So it's really up to you. But in a perfect world, I would hope that people would start with Betwixt and Between, because then you'll really get a good grounding, you know, in what the actual tradition is, and then I think you'll have a better understanding of it.
Mm-hmm. That's why I got them together, because I wasn't sure, but I'm like, you know what, let me get both of them, and that is
I appreciate it. Thank you.
It will take me about a year and a half to read them, but I will get through them. I just, you know, Mexican culture, our indigenous culture, it is an oral tradition, and mm-hmm. that is my story, and I stick with it. That's why I learned from them. And then everything that I teach is just, you know, my voice, and I barely ever read from notes or whatever, and it just takes me forever to read, but I discovered the magic of audiobooks. But I have I have a little bit of a, I don't know, it's a satisfaction to have the book. And then when I have the opportunity to have the author sign them for me, it's just like, oh, it's like getting, you know, a little high. And for folks who are listening out there, yes, you can buy a signed copy. If you're like me, that have that little fetish, you know, they have the book.
Yeah.
And right, it needs to be signed. I mean, come on, you know, it adds value to the book. Of course, I see them as investments. But you know, it's just fantastic to have them. And you also have your series on Reiki books. And for those who want to, tell us a little bit about those.
Those and they're available on Amazon. So I wrote three books, one for each of the three traditional levels of Reiki. So my first one is Awakening the Blue Lotus. Blue Lotus is the name of my school of Reiki, in which I offer some different lineages of Reiki, different styles of Reiki. My second book is Becoming the Blue Lotus, and then finally Mastering the Blue Lotus. And of course, those books are not going to attune you to Reiki. You must be attuned in a ceremony from a Reiki master, according to tradition. But they do have a lot of information. They're small books. They're pretty easy reads. But they do have a lot of information, exercises, and really my take. I also kind of come out of traditional Reiki mindset, and I kind of give my own take on how I think the energy is working and what is actually happening. So if you're a witch or a warlock and you are interested in Reiki, it does have that bit of the mindset, you know. So I actually will use Reiki techniques and stuff in my magical spell work because I really don't see much of a difference. It's just another way of raising and directing energy. And in fact, after I became a Reiki master, I felt that helped me become a better warlock, especially mm-hmm. in the sense of passing initiations to people. Because a Reiki master, of course, they're doing these attunements. Well, an attunement is an initiation. It is an energetic initiation. And so learning the techniques of Reiki helped me to better understand how to pass witchcraft initiations. So I really think that it's really important that we really be open to many different traditions, modalities of thought, because there's going to be things from even traditions you might think might not have anything for you. There's likely going to be something there that gives you a deeper context, a better understanding of what you're doing. And I'm just a fan of just learning as much as I can anyway.
Right.
And then I do have, those are self-published, and I do have one other self-published book. It was actually my very first book I wrote back in 2003, and that is The Stars Within the Earth. And that's actually a book mostly of poetry and some spells, a little bit of my artwork in black and white. But a lot of it is drawing from the mythos of the fairy tradition, and there's some love spells and things in there too. And some of it gets a little racy, you know, so I'll just leave that out there. But so those are all the books that I have out now. So it's what, four or five? So I have six books out now, and I do have two more that are coming from Llewellyn next year.
Yes. Before we go into the new books, I wanted to comment on something. Since we just found out that we are about the same, just about the same age, and grew up probably hearing and seeing very similar things. Do you remember back in the days when healing with hands was just that? And it didn't have a label, it didn't have a lineage or a tradition, because I grew up healing with hands because my father told me how. And it wasn't right. Called Reiki. And similar to your what you just shared with us, it wasn't until I got my Reiki. I'm also a Reiki master teacher, and it's like mm-hmm. it's very similar, but I mean it's a different
yeah.
understanding. But isn't it the same?
I would say it's basically the same, but obviously Reiki has its own like techniques and its own terminology. You know, its own use of symbols, you know, for how things are conveyed and empowered. But basically, yes, it's just another form of this larger, more nebulous, just healing with the hands technique. When I first got my very first Reiki 1 attunement, and I've had many different attunements. I've been reattuned at different levels, you know, all sorts of things. That's kind of the big Reiki pastime. People love to get reattuned. But the first time I got that attunement, I realized, oh, I already have this energy, but now I just had more of it. It just kind of, it brought it more into my consciousness. And then, mm-hmm. of course, it hit me. It's like, well, in Reiki, we say we're dealing with universal life force. Well, that means we all have it. It's universal. If we didn't have it, we wouldn't be alive, you know. Mm-hmm. But through the attunement experience, it really brought that more into my conscious mind. And suddenly I was able to have a conscious relationship with it in a way that I didn't before. So I found it to be useful. It did, quote unquote, increase the power, you know, for lack of a better term. But yes, it's the same thing. I think anybody can do hands-on healing. You don't need to be attuned to Reiki, you know, but Reiki is a specific tradition. So if you want to be working in Reiki, then you have to be attuned, you know, to Reiki. But if what you want to do is just do hands-on healing, absolutely do hands-on healing. You don't need anybody to tell you that it's okay. It's okay. You can just do it. And in fact, if you need someone to tell you it's okay, I'm telling you right now it's okay.
It's okay. I'm seconding that if for what it's worth. I agree. It's okay. So there you go. You have two okays now. Speaking of okays, and before I forget, where can people find your books, where they can find you, and then we're going to talk about the new books, but give us that website once again, please.
Oh, sure. So you can go to my website, that's fairywolf.com, that's F-A-E-R-Y, wolf.com, and that's my personal website. It's in bad need of an update, so don't judge me yet. Or you could go to my online store, which is themysticdream.com. TheMysticDream.com. And I do sell signed copies of my books from TheMysticDream.com. So that's probably the easier place to go. And plus, we sell a lot of other stuff. We sell magical items, bath salts, candles, and all the things, crystals and stuff. I also encourage people, if you have a local spiritual, metaphysical, occult store, I'd encourage you to go to there first, because those are really, they need your business. You know, and small independent booksellers really need your business. So please try that first. But if you can't, then you can order them from me, or you could maybe get them from Barnes & Noble, or definitely Amazon.com has all of my books. But definitely try with the small independent bookseller first, because they really do need your money.
Especially now in this day and age. So I know I've built enough emotion. Tell us about the new book.
So the new books. So I have two new books that are going to be coming out next year. The first of them will be March 8th, and that is The Witch's Name, Crafting Identities of Magical Power. And this is really, this is a book on the concept of the magical name. Of course, it's a fairly common custom to take a new name, you know, when you're initiated into the craft or you're practicing witchcraft. Or other magical traditions as well. It's been a long-standing tradition to take on a magical name. And this, on one level, is to separate your magical from your mundane persona. So when I use my magical name, it causes a conscious shift. But the book is all about, how do you choose that name, and what elements do you want to bring into that name, and why? I see the magical name as a spell that we cast upon ourselves. And so when I took on the name Storm Fairywolf, that actually came to me in a series of dreams. And so that reminds me of the power that I touched in those dreams. It also reminds me that my job, as I see it on Earth, is to be a magical person. And I'm a public warlock. I actually, the name Storm Fairywolf is the name that I use 24/7. When people write me letters, or I get packages, you know, sent to the house, or my bills, it all comes to Storm Fairywolf, because I made that commitment to be a public warlock 24/7. But not everybody will want to do that. You know, some people will want to keep their magical name private, just for their coven, just for their circle, or maybe just between them and their gods. Some people have multiple magical names. I have multiple magical names, depending on the tradition that I'm working in. It helps you to kind of get into the egregore, or that spirit of that particular circle or tradition. So my book is not just a list of names. It's not just a dictionary of names. It's more process of how to come up with the name on your own. And there's a lot of exercises and trance journeys and journal prompts that can help you decide and kind of feel the power and try to put it all together. And So that's coming out in March. And then in May, I have another book coming out, and we haven't decided, Llewellyn has not decided on the title yet, but the working title just changed, actually. The working title now is The Satyr's Kiss. And this is actually a book specifically for queer men. It is a book on witchcraft, and it has a heavy dose of sex magic for queer men in there. And so that's really what the book is about. And so there are, again, exercises, but there's history, a lot of queer history, working with the queer ancestors. I have sex magic exercises for solo practitioners, for couples, and even groups. And there's a lot of different rituals. The rituals I present in two forms, either red or blue, red being a rite that incorporates sexuality, and blue being a rite that, if there are any sexual elements, it's more symbolic. So a red rite or a blue rite. And that terminology was presented to me first in the fairy tradition, but it really kind of, it felt appropriate, you know, for this particular work. So I really wanted there to be something out there specifically for queer men, because of course I'm a queer man. And I wanted there to be stuff that helps us as a group to really kind of claim our spirituality and affirm our sexuality, because there really wasn't much out there. You know, when I was growing up in the craft, I was basically regulated to the status of second-class citizen. You know, there was a lot of people telling me, well, you can't really do it right, or you're going to have to work with a woman, because, of course, a standard traditional element in modern witchcraft is to work with a male-female working partnership, you know. And then even when we don't externalize that, you know, there's a lot of talk of, oh, well, you have that inner male and female, and you have to balance the inner male and female. And as a gay man, I recognized, well, that might work for some people. However, we're still taking this heteronormative model, and we're still saying that this is the pinnacle. This is for everybody. Everybody needs to balance male and female with this heteronormative thing. And so this book is out there saying, nope, Not all of us need to do that. It's not about balancing the inner male and female. It's, for me, it's about redefining what it means to be male or female, you know? And so I'm hoping that it is a book that is inclusive. I really want, you know, trans men to be able to benefit, you know, from this book as well. And I've actually heard from a lot of women who are excited about this book. And I was very happy about that because, of course, I didn't write it for women, but I'm hoping that anybody of any gender will be able to get something out of it. So I'm very excited about that coming out as well. That was actually the first book that I ever wanted to write. So it's very satisfying for me now to be able to actually get this out there. And I'm just finishing up the very last of the edits to send that back into Llewellyn. So got my fingers crossed that all will be well. But yes, that comes out in May, just in time for Pride Month next year. So very, very excited.
So look, no pressure here. No pressure whatsoever. You know how I like to book in advance. That's all I'm
saying. Absolutely. Absolutely.
There you go.
I would love to.
You heard it first here, folks. I am going to grab my book right now, and I'm going to open it in May of 2022. And,
yep.
In March, April, May. And I'm just going to put a little name here that says Storm, because we will love to have you back. And yes, folks, this is how crazy in advance I book, and that's why I'm able to bring you this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful authors to Lunatic Mondays, because y'all are busy people and y'all have like all your agendas and presentations and this and that, and I had to catch it early. So I am so glad that you have just said yes. You heard it here, and to have you back to talk about those two new books, and I'm excited because yeah, it's doing away with this crazy gender heteronormative divisions and kind of like gatekeeping in a way of energy.
Yeah.
You know,
the whole heteronormative thing, that's fine if you're heterosexual and that's where you're catching power. I think that's a beautiful thing. But my idea is that, well, that's not everybody's magic. You know, that's some people's magic, and it might even be most people's magic, but it's not my magic. And so I really wanted to write this for me and for people like me, you know, who maybe have felt marginalized, you know, by the larger magical communities and paradigms. And so just putting it out there, like I have a thing where I rewrite The Great Rite. You know, I work with the Oak King and the Holly King as lovers. You know, so there's a lot there that I'm very excited about. And I've gotten some really good preliminary feedback from folks. And I've got some great authors who have agreed to endorse it. And I'm very excited. Very excited. Christopher Pinzak actually wrote the foreword. And so I'm very excited. He's a good friend of mine.
That is so exciting. I cannot wait to hear that. And I am, for one, very excited that you, from your comments earlier, are including transgender men, because they are so erased. I mean, yeah. I think that is one of the demographics that is more erased in the LGBTQ in the alphabet mafia. I think that transgender men are not seen as much as any other person. But anyway, we can do literally another two shows talking about this whole thing. And it's 8:00. Can you believe it?
Oh my God, that went fast.
I told you.
You did.
It is just, you don't feel it because you're talking so like, you know, it's casual. It's so casual that I have to keep an eye on the clock. Mind you that when I started doing the podcast, it was a 3-hour show.
It would be easy. Like I said earlier, I'm a Gemini moon, so I will talk. So
yep.
So it's good one of us was watching the clock. I appreciate it.
I have to, because I used to, like I said, I used to do 3 hours. Then I cut it to 2 hours. And since we are on CSMP, I've been trying to keep it on an hour. And of course, now we're going a little bit over, but not too much. All I have to say left is thank you so much, first of all, for accepting our next invitation, which will be sometime in May. And
Absolutely. Thank you
so much for being here today. And of course, thank you for signing my books. And
of course, thank you for your support. I really appreciate it.
Of course, I mean this is my passion, man. Doing the podcast and boosting the signal of people who are doing good, inclusive work and magic out there. And I think you're one of my team. So I'm very, very happy to have you on the show. And I'll leave you the microphone so you can say goodnight to your audience.
Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here. And thank you, everyone who is listening. Please buy my books if you can. If you like them, please give them positive ratings on Amazon and Goodreads. That's really important for author sales. I'm trying to make a living doing this. But thank you so much for having me on. This has been a pleasure. And I am looking forward to being back.
Absolutely. We already have you somewhere in May. And thank you, everybody who's listening now or will listen later. And to everybody, good night. And never forget that you are loved. Bye-bye.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.